Banner Life versus Noah. Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Your Honor. Tracy Walker on behalf of Jacqueline Noel. The district court granted summary judgment in favor of Banner Insurance, finding that it had properly rescinded a contract for temporary insurance issued to Gary Noel. This court reviews that grant of summary judgment de novo. The district court erred in granting summary judgment for Banner for three independent reasons, any one of which is a basis for reversal. First, the Part II form filled out by Mr. Noel was not incorporated into the term life insurance, into the temporary life insurance application between Noel and Banner. But second, even if you conclude that the Part II medical history form was incorporated into the temporary insurance application and policy, Banner did not offer clear proof that it relied on the misrepresentations in Part II in issuing the temporary policy. Finally, Banner is a stop from denying coverage because after Noel completed the Part II form, Banner obtained the results of its medical examination of Mr. Noel, and it obtained his medical records, both of which revealed the medical issues that were omitted from the Part II application. Banner subsequently communicated with Mr. Noel and sought clarification about his medical condition, which he truthfully responded to. Yet Banner did not cancel the temporary coverage when it had an opportunity to do so. It is undisputed that in filling out the Part II form on November 30, Mr. Noel did not disclose that he had elevated liver function, which had been revealed by routine blood test. He did not reveal that he had had an abdominal sonogram, that his primary care physician had urged him to see a gastroenterologist, that he had talked to his physician about sleeping issues, and that he had been referred to a sleep disorders clinic. It's undisputed that he did not reveal any of those things in the Part II application. As I indicated, however, subsequently, Mr. Noel underwent a ParaMed examination on December 9, 2010, the results of which revealed his elevated liver function. And the record shows that by December 15, Banner had that information. It had the application for the temporary policy, and it had the premium payment in hand, and its computer system revealed that it indicated that the temporary coverage was bound while it continued to investigate whether to issue the term policy. Banner's underwriter on the term policy application was Lucas, and he got the medical records, and the joint appendix shows that by January 6, Mr. Lucas had the primary care physician's records revealing all of the issues that were omitted from Part II. And on January 21, Mr. Lucas, through Banner's agent Roberts, inquired of Mr. Noel, did you go see the gastroenterologist as your doctor recommended? And Noel responded to the agent Roberts, no. The last time I saw the gastroenterologist was in 2008 when I saw him for hemorrhoid surgery. And that's at page 251 of the joint appendix. So he answered that question truthfully. Banner was aware of the omissions or the misrepresentations on the application Part II, which we contend went with the term policy, but it did not cancel the temporary policy. And there's no dispute that the temporary coverage was in effect during this time period. In Banner's answer to Mr. Noel's counterclaim at paragraph 10, which is in the joint appendix at page 47, Banner states, it is admitted that the TIAA found in pages 10 and 11 provided a limited amount of life insurance coverage for a limited amount of time, which was in effect at the time of Mr. Noel's death. And that's...
Mr. Noel had made a material misrepresentation on the TIAA. Could the company have withheld payment to his beneficiaries?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, that really goes to the heart of the issue and where I think the district court got it wrong. Virginia Code 38.2-309 provides that in limited circumstances, when a misrepresentation is made on an insurance policy application, the policy can be rescinded and the liability is limited to a return of the premiums. But the limitation is that the insurer has to clearly show that the statements were untrue, and secondly, that the company relied on the false statements and that they were material. And that's in this court's decision in Carolina Casualty and many other decisions that are cited by the parties. The falsity is not an issue here, but.
Let me start with the first question, though. My question was focusing on your argument is that he did not make a misrepresentation in connection with the TIAA.
Right.
But rather, any misrepresentation made was in connection with the
term
main policy of insurance.
Yes, sir.
And I look at the TIAA form, and it seems to refer back to the policy of insurance, and it says basically that any misrepresentation it says insurer's liability will be limited to return if any part of the life insurance application or this TIAA contains a misrepresentation material.
Well, Your Honor.
My question is why doesn't that bring in the application parts one and two of the life insurance?
Two reasons. One, the first reason is that the TIAA had its own medical questionnaire.
Well, I understand, but here's explicitly. Now, in addition to that, it says that the insurer's liability will be limited to the return of the amount permitted, remitted, if any part of the life insurance application or this TIAA. Now, he did make, there four statements up there, which are very generalized statements, but they also wanted to incorporate the application for life insurance.
I think there are two reasons. One, I think there is an argument that if you read the TIAA as a whole, that it doesn't reference Part 2 specifically, whereas the term policy does.
No, it referenced the life insurance application. Now, the life insurance application had Parts 1 and 2. And the life insurance application, Part 1, explicitly referred to Part 2. So if you say it only goes to Part 1, whatever it is, it seems to me very clear that the TIAA wanted the representations in the life insurance application to be part of the representations for the TIAA.
All right. Well, the second argument, Your Honor, is, and I think it's the stronger one, is that the factual record in this case demonstrated that Banner did not rely upon in any way the representations in Part 2.
I was just addressing the freestanding argument, and okay. It seems to me you have an uphill battle on that, and I don't know what your answer to it is. The second question, of course, is whether the representation is material.
And let me address that, if I may, Judge, because I think that is very fact-intensive, and I think that the district court missed. The district court said, well, if they relied on the omissions or misrepresentations in Part 2 in connection with issuing the term policy, then they could also essentially void the temporary policy. I think
that's what it says. It says your liability will be limited.
Yes, sir.
Remitting the premium. So it explicitly says if.
But the Virginia Code limits their ability to rescind the policy and says they can only rescind the policy if they relied on it in issuing the policy at issue. And the policy, there were two policies, and they acknowledged that there was a temporary policy and a term policy.
So you think that if they made a misrepresentation, which was incorporated in the TIAA application, and the company, that misrepresentation ended up proving to be a basis by which the company said, hold it, we want to look further at this, and started collecting the medical data, that the fact that they were concerned about it on the general policy wouldn't allow them to be rescind the TIAA.
That is our position because there are two policies, and the reason is The temporary policy is issued automatically unless you have a serious condition.
Except on its face, it doesn't say that. On its face, the conditions of the policy are subject to the representations made.
Well, Your Honor, there are many policies that say that precise thing, where there are misrepresentations made, and nevertheless, the courts have found where they're not relied upon.
Well, let's not look at the two policy notion then. Let's find out whether the representations on part two of the main policy application were material.
Your Honor,
that's a valid argument.
And if I may address that, and that's the point I want to address. There were several better employees who executed affidavits, Mr. Lucas, Dr. Wabnatz, the chief underwriter Jenkins. They all referenced the liver function issue in connection with the decision to postpone the term life policy, but none of them linked it to the, in effect, temporary policy. They said—
You understand they wouldn't link it to it, but the policy itself said it's conditional, and the payout, if there's a misrepresentation, the payout on the limited policy, the term policy, I mean the TIA policy, is remission of the premium. You get the full $1 million if you didn't have a misrepresentation, you get the remission of the premium if you did. And that's the agreement.
And Mr. Roberts, the agent, testified at deposition about whether he would have issued the temporary policy even had he known about the omission. And he first said that he relied on everything in part two, but then he qualified that, and he testified that Mr. Noel would have had to have had something seriously wrong with his health, and he referenced heart disease or AIDS in order to prevent him
from— focus on the materiality. Do you are you suggesting that the liver condition was not material to the risk of issuing a life insurance policy?
Not to the risk of issuing the temporary policy, because Mr. Roberts testified that.
I want to eliminate the two policy
okay.
argument. I want to note just a life insurance policy. Is they ask on part two, let's just stay on the application for the long term.
Yes, sir.
The application asks for medical information and fails to disclose this liver condition. Are you suggesting that the liver condition is not material to the risk being undertaken by that policy?
We do not contest that it is material to the term policy. It would have to be investigated to see if it was a serious condition or not. But Mr. Roberts testified that he would have issued the TIAA even had he known about the elevated liver function.
Well, it doesn't gain you anything. I mean, he did issue it. The problem that you have is you still have an agreement that you're only going to get a limited amount of money if there's a misrepresentation.
Yes, but there are many cases where misrepresentations are made where the company says, well, we wouldn't rely on it. And the Harrell case is the most striking.
They didn't rescind this policy. They're just following its terms. Its terms is to remit the premium if it's a misrepresentation.
The Harrell case from the Virginia Supreme Court to me is the most striking. There, a fellow did not admit or a woman did not admit that she had just gotten out of treatment for cancer. She did not disclose that on her form. The insurance company did the same thing as here. They rescinded, they sent back the first premium after they learned of it after the fact. And the Virginia Supreme Court reversed a trial judgment for the insurance company because the individuals involved at the insurance company said, well, they never gave the statement that they actually relied on her omissions. And the same thing is true here, where Mr. Roberts said, I didn't rely on the liver function omission because I would have given him the temporary policy anyway.
Was Mr. Roberts in a position, or did he have authority from the company to bind the company?
He did not, but they relied on him because they all said it depended on Mr. Roberts, because Mr. Jenkins testified by affidavit that it was up to Mr. Roberts or not. He did not under the terms.
He's not an underwriter, is he? He didn't make an underwriting decision.
The only underwriting decision they make on the temporary policy are the four questions on the temporary policy. They don't look at the part two in connection with issuing the policy, and Mrs. Murray testified to that. She said the only thing we look at for the temporary policy is part one and the temporary policy while we're considering the term policy using part two. So the testimony, they did not, even if you would say a rational insurer, as they said in Harrell, would never issue this policy had they known, they still have to put on evidence that they specifically relied on it.
Let's assume they issued the policy, didn't rescind it. I think facts could support that argument. Don't you still have to
I would agree with you there.
Apply the TIA policy according to its terms?
Only to the extent those terms aren't limited by the Virginia Code section, which is the public policy of Virginia, that even if you have a misrepresentation, it has to have been relied upon in issuing that policy. The Virginia policy recognizes that otherwise many policies would find themselves in the exact same condition of...
You don't think this is construed to be relying on the Part 1 and 2 of the main policy?
No, the other limitations provision says that they can use that to void and return the premium after the fact. It does not say that they relied upon. And the factual testimony from the witnesses, from the Banner employees, was that they didn't look at Part 2 in connection with issuing the temporary policy.
The temporary policies are something that work to the benefit of insureds across the industry. And you get a policy is bound for whatever reason, it's binding for whatever reason. But when the insurer binds the policy, it doesn't begin to have either the time or the resources or whatever to look into any misrepresentations that may be in effect. Or that may have been made, but it still serves a purpose because it allows if something happens and a misrepresentation has not been made, you get a full payout because the company is bound. But I've never understood a policy to require of. What it does, the temporary policy extends the period in which makes the period starts immediately at which the company is bound. But I've never understood a temporary policy to require a full payout if a material representation lies at the heart of it. I've always understood the function of a temporary policy is to make sure that individual is covered for that particular period and that you don't go through a period where there's no where there's no insurance coverage. But it's not to provide, a temporary policy is not to provide a safe harbor where you can defraud an insurance company with all sorts of temporary representations, with all sorts of misrepresentations, and then go out and set a house on fire or whatever. I mean, the whole industry depends on a proper acknowledgement of risk. And what you're depriving the insurer of here goes to the very heart of insurance, which is an appraisal of risk. The insurer is completely left in the dark as to what the true dimensions of the risk are here. And you're saying that you get a full recovery on a policy where the insurer has been misled as to what the true dimensions of the risk are. And that doesn't seem correct to me, especially when the TIAA incorporates by reference the larger documents. I mean, there just seems to me something in terms of basic insurance principles that's wrong with your position.
May I? I'm well over my time. Can I address? There are two quick points on that, Your Honor. First, you referenced what we have always known about insurance. There used to be something called a contingent binder that was just as you described, that you got the temporary coverage if the permanent coverage was actually accepted and it dated back. But this is different because Banner changed its way of doing business and actually issues a temporary policy and a permanent policy if it elects to.
I don't see that even in this because it starts out in talking about this TIAA and it says subject to the terms of the policy applied for and this TIAA, the insurer agrees to pay the limited amount to beneficiaries listed in the application to Part 1.
Yes, sir, but the end date...
Now, they say subject to the conditions of the main policy, as well as the conditions of the TIAA, they agree to make that. And it seems to me it's exactly what Judge Wilkinson was asking. It's really a contingent binder until the full underwriting can be determined and the risk undertaken. And if there's a misrepresentation made that is material to that risk, then this says you just get the premium back.
Well, we obviously contend otherwise because we think under the plain language of the policy, it says the policy ends and it has six different end dates, including when they give notice that they're going to postpone coverage on the term policy or...
My question that the... I didn't assume in the question that this policy ended. I was assuming this policy's in a force.
Right.
And all I'm suggesting is that this policy is issued subject to the conditions of the main policy and subject to the representations made in the main policy. And if that if there's a misrepresentation, this policy says you get back a more limited amount.
And my only response to that, and I've given it, is that under the Virginia Code section, that only is true. The Virginia Code section modifies the language of the contract and says you can only limit your liability if you relied upon the misrepresentation. And the Virginia Supreme Court, the Harrell cases.
I thought you told me you agreed that the liver condition was a material representation for life policy.
But this is where I disagree with you because the witnesses testified, Mr. Jenkins testified that they relied on the agent, Mr. Roberts, to decide whether to give the temporary policy. And he said
underwriter. He's not.
Let's hear what the other side has
to
say, unless Judge Gregory has some.
And, Your Honor, may I have one? Can I preserve one point on rebuttal?
You've got some rebuttal time.
That's what I was asking. Thanks,
right.
Judge.
Mr. Delano, let's hear your.
Morning, Your Honor. It's our position, the Banner's position, that Mr. Noel, they clearly proved in the district court, as the district court found, that Mr. Noel made multiple misrepresentations in the application, which were material to the risk. That Banner can rely upon these because their part two medical history is incorporated by reference into the TIAA. That the plaintiff failed, that Mrs. Noel failed to prove the requisite elements of estoppel, and even if she did, the unclean hand defense prevents her from relying upon that. First of all, dealing with the issue about the TIAA's other limitations provision that Judge Niemeyer has been referencing, the TIAA clearly says on the first page in bold print, this agreement sets forth a limited amount of life insurance coverage for a limited amount of time subject to the terms and conditions below. And then when it gets into the agreement part, it's, as Judge Niemeyer pointed out, subject to the terms of the policy applied for and this TIAA, and it goes on to list them, and one of which is the other limitations provision, which limits the insurer's liability to a refund of the premiums if, in fact, they prove material misrepresentations in the application. We submit that that was done here, and we would also like to point out settled Virginia law that when somebody signs an application, they're charged with what they're signing, and they're bound thereby, and we submit that Mr. Noel was bound by that. And we point out that in addition to the parts that the counsel was referring to, the things he misrepresented, they also left off some of the other things that he failed to. I believe they failed to point out that Dr. Quarles, his primary care physician, had made repeated recommendations that Mr. Noel consult with a gastroenterologist specialist, Mr. Davis, and that there was countless references to that in record, and he never consulted him, and also he never underwent the diagnostic sleep study that both the Virginia Sleep Disorder Center and also Dr. Quarles had recommended. So there were multiple misrepresentations. Unlike most Virginia cases, you have a misrepresentation case involves maybe one, possibly two questions on the application. This one, the district judge referred to six different questions where there were material misrepresentations made by Mr. Noel. And we submit that that's a basis for it. And the TIAA's reference to the other limitations, it says any part of the life insurance application or this TIAA contains a misrepresentation material to the insurance.
We've read your brief, and these were all points that were made and should have been made in your brief. So at this point, I'm going to ask just the panelists what questions they have for you, Judge. We don't have any further questions.
Okay, thank you, Judge.
Mr. Walker.
On rebuttal, I want to address one point that was not articulated as clearly as it could have been in the briefing on estoppel. The district court pointed to two cases, Parkerson v. Federal Home Life Insurance from the Eastern District of Virginia, a Judge Payne case, and Employer Commercial Union v. Great American. But it relied on Simopoulos. Simopoulos said that if there's an omission on a policy, an insurance company is not on inquiry notice such that it has to cancel a policy. But in Parker, we're not dealing with inquiry notice here because as in the Parkerson case and the Employer's Commercial Union case, and Parkerson is 797F1308, Employer's Commercial Union is 214 Virginia 410. As in both of those cases, we're dealing with a situation that shortly after the application was submitted with omissions, that the insurance company became aware of those omissions. And the district judge said that Noel could not rely on the equitable defense of estoppel because of unclean hands. But in Parkerson,
What is your estoppel argument, stop the company from doing?
A stop from rescinding the policy or limiting a stop from limiting the return to the premium, just as they attempted to do in Parkerson.
If there is a misrepresentation, do they have and they don't they discover it, say on the 15th? You're hypothetical. Can't they apply the policy according to its terms then? When there's in other words, when there's a loss under the policy, they paid the premium.
They didn't
attend to rescind it at that point, did they?
All right. They're not using the term return the premium rather than rescind. That's precisely what the insurer did in Employers Commercial Union v. Great American. They attempted to do.
Is the language of the policy that provide that in that case?
It's similar policy. It's an automobile liability policy, but the company learned.
This is a contract we're talking about, right?
But there was a loss, a significant loss, and within 2 days, the insurance company was aware that the driver had not revealed
convictions.
But did the policy convictions
provide that if there was a misrepresentation, as a term of the policy, that the loss would be limited to return of the policy, premium?
I cannot say as I stand here. I just know that the company took the position that all it had to do was return the premium.
Well, and that's also consistent with a rescission.
But the Virginia Supreme Court said that although they only waited 11 days to send a cancellation notice, they waited too long because they were aware of the omission and they didn't act on it.
What about the clean hands defense?
Well, that's the Parkerson case. Judge Payne declined to enter summary judgment on the unclean hands issue because he said that once an insurance company knows of the factual situation, once the true situation is revealed, there is some duty on the insurer to take action. And so he declined to enter summary judgment at that stage of the case in Parkerson. And I have the jump site here. I can't find the jump site, but that was the very issue that the defendant there raised. In fact, the insured moved for summary judgment, and he said you can't issue you can't have summary judgment on that because there is an issue if the insurance company knows and does not act, and the insured is relying on that, just as happened here.
So what happened here? What prompted the insurance company to ask for the medical records?
That is their standard operating procedure, and Mr. Noel.
That's part of the underwriting.
Gave his consent.
Physical exam, and then asked for the medical records.
Yes, sir.
And then after they get all of that, then to make the determination.
And they had all that by January 5, and they continued to.
What did they say after they had the medical records?
They continued to consider it, but they also reached out to Mr. Noel.
No, I'm asking, what did they do after that? Did they postpone their determination?
No, they did nothing. They sat and waited. The only action item they took was that on later in January, they sent a request to Mr. Noel through the agent and asked him, did you ever go see the gastroenterologist? And he said
so
no.
They're still investigating at that point.
But the investigation was to send that question.
All right. And what happened after that? What did they do after that?
They decided to postpone coverage on February 4.
And what was the reason for that?
Because they needed to know more about the elevated liver function.
Okay, so they were still investigating, right?
But
they needed to know more. They were now had determined that they couldn't just go ahead with what they had, the information
yes, sir.
They had.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.